speak to me. Okay, Wes, I believe the thing is recording. This is Wes Bassett and John Cowart, friends having a conversation, and Wes is telling me about cooking on a wood stove. And my chair squeaks, so y'all are going to have to live with that. Okay.
Well, now, a chair that don't squeak isn't worth having.
Well, speak to the world. They are waiting to hear about your grandmother cooking on a wood stove.
Well, I think I was telling you about... We started out talking about up at Firefox Museum, Foxfire Museum, up in Raven County, Georgia. And I was telling you about this little cabin up there where this Scottish immigrant had raised a family of 10 children, and one of his kids lived there and raised a family of 10 children, and one of his grandchildren after that raised a family of 10 children. This little one-room 21 by 21-foot cabin. And I think you and I have talked, both of us, before about the fact that we are both of that heritage. Appalachian heritage and mindset. But, you know, my folks are from up there. And
well, we're pure Florida crackers.
Well, my folks came from Appalachians in Virginia and North Carolina. But, anyway, I was telling you about my father's great-grandmother, this would have been my grandfather's grandmother that lived with them until my dad was 10. She died when my dad was 10, but according to John L. Yon, who is the family historian, he's got, you know, he spends his life online doing genealogical research on the family, and according to him, she was born in 1819 and died in 1939 at the age of 119. And my dad remembers she lived with them and was a productive part of the family up until she died. But he remembers her. She would have been over 110, but she remembers herself hitching up a horse or a mule to a wagon, a buckboard type wagon, I reckon, and carrying the kids to church on the wagon. And they lived at that time on the corner at 21st and Franklin. My grandfather was a section foreman for the railroad, and so they lived
in
That was here in Jacksonville. And he was a section foreman for the railroad, and so there was the way the railroad was set up back at that time, the section foreman and the section crew all lived in a row of houses. The section crew lived in these little shotgun houses.
Company housing.
And the section foreman lived in a larger house, but this was a two-room house that had a double fireplace. My grandmother, until they got up to where they could buy them a wood-burning stove, she cooked on the hearth, you know, on the kitchen side of the house. My dad was 14 years old before they had electricity. Pardon, he was born in 1927. That's really something to think about. But
they used the kerosene lamps for lighting.
Coal oil lamps, and either the double fireplace, or later on the wood stove for heat. But anyhow, I was mentioning the fact that she lived to be 119, and apparently she was in pretty good health and a productive part of the family up until right at the end. But my dad's mother...
Okay, now, before you go to her, you were telling me a little earlier about what kind of church they went to.
Oh,
what
they
your
went
dad
to,
thought of it?
They went to Talleyrand Baptist Church. The church is still there, but I think it's a Southern Baptist church now. But back then, it was some kind of a shouting, hollering Baptist church. And Daddy said that it would scare him to death that he'd crawl down under the pew when they'd get started in there, because it would just scare the daylights out of him with them in there hollering, shouting, carrying on. But anyhow, I was telling you about my dad's mother, and they actually were related. Now, she was a Yawn. This lady that I was telling you about was a Bracewell. But the Bracewells and the Yawns, for three successive generations, intermarried. Yawns marrying Yawn girls, marrying Bracewell boys, and Bracewell girls marrying Yawn boys, and there are three generations of them.
That explains a lot about your mindset.
It does. It does. There were three generations of them, consecutive generations of intermarriage, because they were both big families over in that part of the country, and they were, you know, pretty much all there was, and that wasn't real uncommon back then. But my grandmother and grandfather were first cousins, and
now, would you believe this? Back during the 20s, my Aunt Hazel, she grew up at a house right there at 21st and Phoenix. So within spitting distance of where your folks were. I never realized that before.
On my mother's side, my grandmother lived on the corner of 21st and Phoenix back in the 20s and 30s. Which was back then, folks who had moved in from the farm, it was kind of out in the country from Jacksonville.
Yes.
It's hard to believe it now, but back then it was out in the country and far from town. But anyway, my father's mother, who was a Yawn, but she was related because of this intermarriage thing. She was related to these long-lived people. They're long-lived on both sides. Her mother lived to be 98, had 23 children, and I think about 19 of them lived. And she was a productive person up until just right at the end. She died of, you know, old age complications, pneumonia, and that kind of thing. But when she was 96, 97 years old, she was still making quilts and that kind of thing. She was, my grandfather, her husband, my grandfather Chermignon, lived over in Baxter, Florida, which is just about non-existent now. But at that time, he had two big section houses. He worked for the railroad that he had put back to back and joined together for this huge family that he had. And from what I've heard, I've never saw the house just burn down right after the war, but
the war, which?
World War II, sorry.
The big one. I thought you meant the war.
Yeah.
The Civil War. You meant one of these other ones. Go ahead.
That all burned down, so it was long before my time. But anyway, they lived in this big house. But anyway, they got married. Grandpa and Grandma Yawn got married when she was, as was typical at that time, he was about 16, I think, and she was 13 or 14.
Yes.
And he worked for the railroad. Well, he was a pretty industrious fellow, and he had this property. He had, I don't remember how many acres, but a huge piece of property over there that he farmed, and I think he sharecropped out some of it. But he also had this big house, and he had the railroad depot. He owned the railroad depot, and he owned it was where the trains would stop and take on water and fuel. And there was a place for people to sleep there of some sort. And he also had the grist mill and the sugarcane grinding mill. And he had the corner on grinded sugarcane. I'll get back to you, my grandmother, in a minute. But he had the corner on grinded sugarcane because he had a mule-powered sugarcane mill you know, that's got the two big gears in it, and you got a mule that walks around on a pole and turns the gears. Well, he took a notion that he could corner the sugarcane grinding market in that part of the country, and he got a 1927 Chevrolet engine and mounted it on top of that thing and geared it up somehow or another. He'd fire that thing up, and he could grind more cane in an hour than everybody else could grind in a month.
Yes.
And so he had the corner on sugarcane grinding, but he also had a grist mill, and he had a general store and a big farm, and he had something else over there. But anyhow, he was just a very industrious, smart, typical old Southern fellow. You know, there wasn't much money, but there was. Daddy said he loved to go stay out there with him, because out at Grandma's house, you could have 2 eggs for breakfast if you wanted to. Lord have mercy, that was high living. And but anyhow, my grandmother, who was the daughter of these people, she lived to be 90 years old. When she was about 75, she must have been 75 or so. I'm trying to think, this would have been in 1983. She was born in 1908, so she would have been 75 years old. She called me just after I'd bought my truck and my house, and I had just put in a wood stove. Well, she knew I was collecting. She was very amused by the fact that I was so interested in her life and the way things had been. She thought it was really great that I was so interested in those things. And anyhow, she called me and told me they had a pecan tree that they were going to cut down, and she wanted to know if I wanted it to take home for firewood, because they were going to cut it down and plant an apple tree where it was. So I said sure. So Reese, my brother Reese, and I went over there in my new pickup truck, and we got over there, and I shouldn't have been surprised at this, but Grandma was up in the tree, 75 years old. She was up in the tree with a handsaw cutting off limbs. And she had already cut through this tree most of the way with an axe, chopped it down most of the way with an axe. And my grandfather, of course, was sitting on the porch watching, which was his favorite activity. But she,
I take after your grandfather.
She had climbed up this tree, and I don't mean with a ladder either. She had shinnied up this tree and was up in the tree cutting off limbs with his handsaw. And she skittered down the tree and finished cutting it down and felled it in the yard. And we picked up the trunk of it and managed to work it up and set it up in the back of the pickup truck, the main part of it. But when she was probably 85 years old, I reckon, we had to make her stop getting up on the roof, because they had pine trees all around the house, and she just couldn't stand having pine straw up on the roof. They had a part of the house where the roof came off, and there was just a covered back porch with these wrought iron trellis things that supported the edge of the roof. And she'd take her shoes off and climb up that trellis with a broom and get up on the roof and sweep off the top of the house. When she was 85 years old, we figured she needed to stop doing that kind of stuff.
Good heavens.
So we persuaded her to quit getting up on the roof.
Well, I think I led a productive life up until the time I was, say, 35 years old, and since then I've been coasting. As you were talking, it reminded me something that my Aunt Hazel had told me about. I really wish that I had paid more attention to the family stories that she told and the things that she had lived through, but, you know, being young and stupid, this old lady's, I tolerated her talking and didn't really pay the attention I should have. But apparently, during her younger days, why, she was quite involved with gangsters and so forth. She mentioned knowing John Dillinger, who had a boat here in Jacksonville. And I have often wondered if I've got a picture in my book, The Crackers and Carpetbaggers, of John Dillinger's boat, and there's some girls in the back. I have often wondered if that could have been her in her heyday. But when she was very, very old, I think pushing 80 or maybe more, we were talking about some young man that we both knew that had been through a number of marriages and so forth. She said something that I will never forget, her insight into the human condition. She said, John, I think that the devil owed him a debt and decided to pay him off in women. But that was the kind of saying that she would come up with, that a very astute old lady.
Owed him a debt and paid him off.
Paid him off in women. Oh, could we keep recording, or?
Yeah, I reckon.
That's 16 minutes of.
Are you folks interested in hearing all of this stuff?
Yeah, well. We get together and do this every week or so, just chatting about whatever happens to.
When I went up to
the time.
But when I went up to the Foxfire Museum.
That was just last Thursday?
Which was last week, yeah. One of the houses, it was a rainy day, although it wasn't pouring down rain, but there were spells of little rain showers. And this place is actually in Black Rock Mountain State Park. And it is
in Georgia.
Raven County, Georgia, which is just under the North Carolina border on 441.
Okay.
And anyway, there's a place there called, for any of you folks who are listening who are familiar with the Foxfire books, this is the Foxfire Museum and Appalachian History Center. And they actually do have an ongoing project that is made up primarily of high school students from Raven County High School and some school in North Carolina, who have one of these houses a large collection of transcribed interviews and videotapes and just shelves and shelves and shelves and shelves of stuff that has been collected over the last. Since 1966, when the Foxfire Movement started.
The Foxfire Movement, as I recall, was initially a high school project where the kids would go out and interview the very oldest members of the community to get information about dyeing technology that would pass on how to butcher a hog, how to smoke meat, how to dig a well, how to cook on a wood stove, ghost stories that the old people told, just reminiscence of their younger days. And then the kids would write all this stuff up and publish it as a Foxfire book.
It was originally started by an English teacher, whose name I don't recall, who was trying to do something to get his senior class interested in writing. That's how it got fired up. And
yes.
He was wondering about all this, and there was one of his students. He had talked about some of the ancient dyeing technology.
Well, that's a cuckoo clock in the background.
He was talking at some point about this Appalachian technology, which was early American technology that was becoming a lost art. Because the people who knew it were dying off. And one of his students came up and said, well, my Aunt Ari that lives Macon County in southern North Carolina, my Aunt Ari still does all that stuff. And that started a relationship with a woman by the name of Aunt Ari. There's a whole book written about her, who kind of became the star of the Foxfire Movement because she was such a charming as this writer says about her in his book, in his foreword to the book, he says she was just a decent person. She was just a decent human being. And he says it in such a way that he's almost...
High praise.
High praise, yes. And he says it in such a way that he... And as a matter of fact, he says that for 30 years, he has just been enamored with the memory of the woman because she was such a decent person. At any rate, that's how the Foxfire movement got started, and that's why there is that little center up there. They still publish a magazine, a quarterly magazine called Foxfire, and they're publishing books. They've come out with the 12th book, and you can buy it. You can go on the internet and buy it. They need the support. But anyway, I was telling you, these houses. This museum consists primarily of about 8 or 10 acres square on the side of a mountain, Black Rock Mountain. Right on, it straddles the Continental Divide, the Eastern Continental Divide. It's a collection of houses and buildings that were built in the 1800s. The oldest one there was built in 1820, but they're log cabins and other types of buildings that have been moved from southern Appalachia in various places to the Foxfire Center to preserve the building and the technology of the building and all of that stuff.
Now, tell me, are there people giving demonstrations of different
there are,
skills?
Not all the time, but there yeah. are.
Were there any working when you
not
were there?
Not when I was there, oh, no. Okay. I want to go back when they actually have a guided tour so we can go in some of the places and see the... You know, they have a place where they do a hog scalding and butcher a hog once a year when the weather gets cold and put up canned souse meat and
yes.
that kind of stuff.
I was actually in on one of those things when I was a kid at mm-hmm. my grandparents' house where they mm-hmm. killed a hog and the whole community gathered there. I mean, this was a mm-hmm. you know, major project. And they killed the hog, they chained it by the rear feet up to it over a limb and dunked it in boiling water and mm-hmm. boiled it, scraped the skin off and then butchered it and mm-hmm. fed the entrails to the dogs, which was an interesting thing for me as a kid. That was the most interesting part. But then they cut up hams and ribs and things and used absolutely every part of this pig. They pickled the feet, they made head cheese, blech, whatever that is, out
yeah.
of the head. They canned
souse meat,
whatever. Mm-hmm. But they just made sausages, all of this stuff, all in a day, a whole community, and then they started eating on this pig, and I don't know if there's any left or not, I think. But the idea was everybody got meat for the winter.
Right.
If I recall, it was probably in the November that they...
Uh-huh.
But like I said, the most interesting part to me was feeding the guts to the dog. Oh, wow. Because they had uh-huh. several pit bulls. And everybody mm-hmm. brought their dog. That was part of the family.
No.
This is in Baker County, Florida.
Am I?
Broward.
Yeah.
Well, Broward County. Excuse me.
Broward. Okay, yeah. Because yeah. my folks are from Baker County. My dad's side of the family. And just for any of you all who are interested... There are members of my family over there that are still making moonshine, just the old-fashioned way, just like they used to 75 years ago. When at my mother's funeral 2 years ago, some of the family were there, and the two big points of discussion, they were all standing around down in one end of the room talking, and the two big points of discussion at my mother's funeral was who's active in the Klan this year. And who's making moonshine this year?
Yeah, yeah.
But
they still have the Klan over there?
They still have the Klan here. There's a chapter of the Klan out in Ocean Way.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, they still have the Klan over there. These are
well, another thing I recall about talking about the moonshine thing, Granddaddy, I suppose he was a tenant farmer and had 500 acres or so, some under cultivation and others just piney woods. But some of the local guys had gone way out in the woods and set up a still. And Granddaddy let his hogs run wild during the part of the day, part of the, because he'd call them, you know, wee, pick, 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 all that stuff. But he was very upset because these moonshiners had dumped the sour
mash
on the ground. The hogs got into it. Now, I think it poisoned, killed some of the hogs or what, but, you know, made them sick or drunk or...
Uh-huh.
He was very, but he called the sheriff to him because he was hard-shell Baptist and didn't cotton to moonshining and drinking.
Now, I tell you, you want to talk about I've heard about that too. My friend Reed, folks, I'm not going to tell you all the history about Reed, but an old lady friend of mine who lived over in North Jacksonville, who was again of this vintage and of this stock, told me about them making moonshine. If you put lye in it, if you put lye in the moonshine, it is poisonous. It makes it make faster, okay? But and some people will put lye in it to make it make. But if you make it the right way, it's not poisonous. Except in the sense that any kind of alcohol is poisonous. But at any rate, Reet was telling me about how they used to, when she was a kid, they'd make moonshine and make it down in the woods over off of what's now Lynn Turner. And she told me that they thought it was the most amusing thing on the day when they'd pour out the mash. They'd intentionally pour it out where all the animals could get to it, and they'd sit around and watch the animals, the horses and the chickens and all the birds and everything like it. And she said the chickens would get drunk and get up in the trees and fall out of the trees, and the the cows would lay over in the grass and
they didn't have cable, so
they didn't have cable. So that was how they amused themselves, watching the animals get drunk on the mash.
You know, one time Jenny and I visited my granddad shortly before he died, and he sat me down on the porch to tell me about it, because none of them boys, meaning all of his sons and such, would have paid attention, but he wanted me to know how to train an ox and to hook up an ox team, because, John, you never know when you might need to know that. But he told me all about how that you would tame a wild ox. And there's a definite step-by-step procedure that he went over with me to train oxen, because he had done that in his younger days to pull logs out of the woods to sell to the sawmill and such. But he gave me a complete description of how to...
That is a remarkable art. There's a...
Yes, they were definitely, you know, you don't just say giddy up ox, but there's a whole
A cable channel called RFD-TV that caters strictly to the needs of rural America, and they have on there animal training programs where they show you how to do this. And they had a gal on there the other day that had a pair of oxen that she had these oxen trained so that they were moving together, manipulating just on real basic, simple voice commands and, you know, that kind of stuff. They were manipulating and moving as though they were in a yoke together, but they were not. They were just standing side by side. And it was amazing to watch. I mean, there is a whole art in knowing how to communicate with these animals in such a way that they understand you, and they appear to be pleased and find some kind of fulfillment in their life by becoming useful.
Well, Granddaddy, talking about the yoke, he said to when you have new oxen that aren't used to it, if you try to put the yoke on them, they will try to turn to face each other and can break their necks. So one of the things you be sure to do when you put the yoke on, you tie their tails together so they can't try to turn to face each other. Isn't that cool? You didn't know that, did you? Well, we have been broadcasting this thing for 30 minutes now. We had originally thought of doing our talks as two fat guys talking theology, but we've taught you how to make moonshine and drink. Do you have any spiritual thought of significance to...
Well, no, I don't have any spiritual thoughts at the moment because I don't happen to have any moonshine handy.
Okay, well, people, thank you very much for listening. I'm going to go ahead and cut it off in 30 minutes.
Okay.
And, the timer thing here says 30 minutes and 32 seconds. So thank you for listening. We're going to do this again, and maybe we'll talk theology next time. Okay. Bye-bye. Say bye, Wes.
Bye-bye.
If I figure out how to cut the thing off.